Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
Relatives. She stated that she sent a letter, that she was retained to send the letter. Now going to explain something.
Okay, overruled.
Okay. What was the purpose of the letter?
The purpose of the letter was to open the door for discussion about Doug's participation in the upcoming birth of their child, but also to advise that if she did not feel comfortable with him being present at the birth, he was respecting her need for space.
And when did you send that letter?
I sent that letter on March 15th. At 9:59 in the morning by email to Ms. Benefield.
Okay. And did you receive a response to that letter?
I did not receive a response directly from Ms. Benefield. She checked herself into Tampa General the next day to start induction.
Sustained.
So when was the child born?
Well, the child was born early. She was born on March 19th, I believe, is when she was finally born.
And you said early. How many weeks early was that?
Well, the child was originally scheduled, or her due date was April 8th. So I think...
Sustained.
Okay. So you said you never received a response.
Not from Ms. Benefield.
From Ms. Benefield about the letter.
Correct.
And to your knowledge, did Doug ever receive a response to
that letter? To my knowledge, he did not receive any response from Ms. Benefield or anyone on her behalf.
Okay. And... I think you might have said this, but the child was born on what day?
She was born on the 19th of March.
Okay. And at the time the child was born, did you or Doug know that the child was born?
No, gosh, we didn't know for a good 5 or 6 weeks after she was born.
Okay. And how did you find out that the child was born?
I actually found out because I had been monitoring the docket for Manatee County court system, just because there had been no response. And so on May 6th, I saw that Ms. Benefield had filed a petition for protection against domestic violence on, I think it was April 23rd. So about 2 weeks prior to me finding out, she had filed the petition. And in that filing, there was she identified the birth date of the child, as well as, I think, the child's name, which is the first time we learned about that, too.
Okay. And you said she filed a petition for, what did you call it?
It's a petition for protection against domestic violence. So it's an injunction. A lot of people refer to it as a restraining order, but it wasn't granted as an injunction at the time.
Okay. So when, just for knowledge of people that may not know, when someone does a request for an injunction, what is sort of the procedure that it needs to go through?
So a person who files a petition for an injunction, they file it at the courthouse in the clerk's office, and then that gets sent up to the judge, usually a family law judge, who's just in charge of injunctions that day. And then the judge has three options, I believe. One is just to deny it completely. The second option is to grant a temporary injunction, but then there's a follow-up or a return hearing.
I'll overrule.
And then the third option is what happened in this particular case, is that the judge denied the petition as a temporary injunction, so there weren't enough there wasn't enough evidence in the petition to warrant a temporary injunction, but a hearing was set to review it.
Okay. And When was that hearing set approximately, to your knowledge?
I believe it was originally set for May 8th, but Ms. Benefield made a request to continue that hearing.
Okay, so it was then continued?
It was.
Before the hearing actually happened, did you file any documents on Doug's behalf?
I did. So, well, of course, I filed a notice of appearance in that injunction case. And then we started an entirely separate case. So I filed on Doug's behalf a petition for a parenting plan unconnected with divorce. And so he wanted to establish a parenting plan so that he had really time sharing and decision making for his daughter, because he had none of that up to that point because she was withholding all that information.
And some of the lingo may be familiar to us, but so time sharing, what is that?
I'm sorry. So time sharing is what lay people and a lot of people used to generally call visitation. So it used to have custody, parent had custody, and then another parent had visitation. That was changed, and now in Florida at least, and especially in our circuit, we have parenting plans, which is a comprehensive agreement or an order by the court that lays out all the details of parenting as a not intact family. So the major components are decision making and time sharing schedule. So how often the child spends with each parent.
And you said not connected with a divorce proceeding?
Right.
So I would assume that means it can either be with a divorce proceeding or without.
It can be. And of course, it can be also in a paternity case, so parents don't have to be married. But in this case, because they were married, Doug was not initially pursuing a divorce because he hadn't had any contact with Ms. Benefield for a while. His initial...
Sustained.
Okay. So initially it was not connected with divorce.
Right. His priority was his daughter.
And you mentioned the injunction case and then your motions. Were they two different case numbers?
They were two different case numbers. So the injunction case number was 2018 DR 1823. And then the new case that I filed for Doug was 2018 DR 2318. Now, they're companion cases, though, so they might be separate cases, but they travel together as companion cases, and they're assigned to the same judge through this unified family court program.
Okay. So when the hearing was set and ultimately heard, were both of those case numbers heard?
Both of the case numbers were heard, but it wasn't our first pleading wasn't the same pleading that was heard at the time of the injunction.
Objection. It's narrative, non-responsive to the question.
Sustained.
So, what generally were the allegations in the injunction petition?
Generally, Ms. Benefield was alleging that Doug had been violent toward her. She alleged that he, I think, had hit the dog, fired a gun into the ceiling. The biggest allegation was that he was poisoning her and their child in utero with heavy metals.
Okay. When was this hearing finally held?
The hearing was held in two parts, actually. It was July 30th, and then the second part was September 17th.
Not responsive to the question, Your Honor.
Overruled.
And that was the year 2018, correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And what judge was this in front of?
It was in front of Diana Moreland.
Okay. And you said it was held on 2 days. Why was it held on two different days?
It took a very long time. So okay. We had, both sides had experts, toxicologists, and we had a number of other witnesses appearing. We had...
Objection, not responsive to the question.
Overruled.
There were also people from the Child Protective Team testifying. And so there were too many hours, and so we couldn't squeeze it all into one day.
Okay. And ultimately, at the end of this, did Judge Moreland make a decision?
At the end of that, she did. There were other decisions along the way, but ultimately she made a decision on the two matters that were set as the companion cases.
And what I meant was, on the second hearing day, did she make a decision?
Yes, she did, September 17th.
And what was that decision?
There were two parts because, you know, there was two cases.
Objection, Your Honor, just final decision.
For the prior motion?
Yes.
Yeah. Overruled.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. For the injunction, she made a lot of rulings and a lot of findings about lack of evidence and then denied the petition.
We don't want to talk about what went into that. We just want to know what her ruling was.
Okay. She denied the injunction. So that was the first part.
Okay. And then the second part?
The second part was on the parenting plan case, or the timesharing case. And so in that, she entered a ruling for a timesharing schedule that would be an introduction schedule, because Doug at that point had never met his daughter, and that would increase over time on a temporary basis. And then she entered a ruling that he would have ultimate decision-making authority over the child's medical needs and otherwise shared decision-making.
Overruled.
And otherwise, I'm sorry.
Otherwise, share parental responsibility, which is joint decision making.
Okay. And as of that day, was Judge Moreland's ruling timed? Like, was it immediate? Was it in the future for the time sharing?
It was immediate. Well, not that day, but she said the first day, and it was just a couple of days later, the 21st, which is when Doug was supposed to meet his daughter for the first time.
Okay. And this time that Doug met his daughter for the first time, were you present?
I was, yes.
Okay. And where did this happen?
It happened at Manatee County Sheriff's Department on, I think it's 301.
Did you arrive together or separate with Doug?
Oh, we arrived separately. When I got there, Doug was already there.
Okay. And how old approximately was the baby at the time?
I think she was around 6 months old. She was born in March. And this was then the 21st of September. It's about 6 months.
And can you explain how that interaction went? Did you observe it, first of all?
I did.
Okay.
I arrived, I got into Doug's truck, and we just waited because we were there early. And then he saw Ashley arrive with the baby. And so he pulled the truck closer, and then we both got out of the car. And started walking toward Ashley, and then it was just an odd kind of interaction, actually. She turned to me with just this nasty look on her face and said to Doug.
I'll sustain this to the characterization.
She turned to Doug and said, "Are you dating her?" Just like, and so obviously we both said, "Well, of course not, no." And then I hung back, and Doug then was standing there, and Ashley approached him with Emerson, and they started talking. Eventually, she let him hold the baby, and they just kept talking for a few minutes. Then I was advised that they were going to be leaving together, strangely, that Ashley was going to be going with them for the time sharing.
Was this a surprise to you?
Absolutely. We had just been in knockdown, drag-out litigation for months with just horrendous allegations that were unfounded, and yet she said, "I want to go with you," and he said, "Okay."
Objection to the characterization of the allegations being unfounded and continued editorializing by this witness.
Can we approach?
Sustained.
So when they told you they were going together, what was your response?
I pulled Doug aside, and I cautioned him about going with her. I advised, I'm his attorney, and so I did advise him. I said, "This isn't a good idea. She's trying to set you up for something. Don't do this." And he said, "I understand. I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway." And so I stayed and observed as Ashley strapped the car seat into the back of the truck, and she got in the truck with Doug, and then they left together for his first time sharing with his baby.
Okay.
For their baby.
So after this first time sharing, did this seem to start a time of peace, so to speak?
It was a time of peace. Actually, before the 26th, but on the 26th, Doug and Ashley both signed a stipulation that I had drafted at Doug's request, which expanded the time sharing that Judge Moreland had ordered at the hearing on the 17th. So within a week, they had already agreed that he was going to have even more time sharing than Judge Moreland had said.
Okay.
And so that was filed in the court file. It took away the restriction of meeting at the sheriff's office if they chose.
Non-responsive.
Overruled.
So yes, that was the beginning of a time of peace that extended for quite a period of time.
Okay. And during this time, well, how long did that last, the peace?
It lasted, to my knowledge, about 11 months.
Okay. And during this 11 months, did you see Doug and Ashley?
I saw them in magazines, actually. They were attending gala events together, and so they were kind of the...
Speculative and hearsay.
Overruled.
So other than seeing them together at the sheriff's office, I didn't personally observe them out in public, but I did. Like I said, I saw them in various forms of media. They're quite the couple.
Okay. And you said this piece lasted about 11 months. What broke this piece, to your knowledge?
Well, it was my understanding from Doug that they were getting ready to move in.
Let's not talk about what happened with what Doug said was supposed to happen. But during this time, did Ashley stop speaking to him?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question.
During this time, did Ashley stop speaking to Doug?
Objection. I'll let you know it calls for hearsay.
Effect on the listener.
Overruled.
Thank you. They continuously spoke to one another for 11 months until August 16th of 2019.
Objection. I thought that was a yes or no question. Objection. Non-responsive.
Sustained.
Okay. So, around this time, you said November 16th?
August 16th. August 16th. Of 2019.
Okay. What happened at this time?
Doug was supposed to be moving in with Ashley and her mother, Alicia. He had moved all of his things in.
And we're not going to talk about the specifics of that.
Sorry, counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt. Your Honor, I request the instruction from the court about...
Can we not do speaking objections?
Do you need to approach? All right, members of the jury, this is one of those situations that's going to take us a few minutes, so I'm going to excuse you back to the jury room. Again, please don't begin the deliberations amongst yourselves. Please don't contact or speak with anyone outside of the jury about this case. Don't do any research on the people, places, things, or legal topics we've heard anything about. But certainly you can use your phones and everything else to communicate with folks. Thank you. The jury's out. You can all have a seat. Ms. Murphy, at this point, I'm going to excuse you from the courtroom so we can have our hearing. Ma'am, the rule of sequestration has been invoked. You're not to discuss your testimony or the questions that have been asked with anyone, including the attorneys, any other witnesses, any third parties. You're not to talk with other witnesses about questions they were asked or testimony they provided. And it's my understanding this may be on the internet somehow, so you're not supposed to watch anything at all that's happening within these four balls.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, the witness is out of the courtroom. Do you have...
Judge, I don't have a specific instruction. We may need to craft one, but what I'm looking for so that the court knows is an instruction to the jurors that these hearsay statements that have been repeated by the witness thus far and for purposes of the remainder of her testimony, the other statements she will undoubtedly try to get out are not being offered for the truth of the matter, but rather being offered for whatever reason that the court wants to ascribe to provide the context to her narrative in response to the question.
So as I said, go ahead, do you want to be heard?
No.
So as I said, I'm not aware of a standard jury instruction
in the 2.1 to whatever it is, 2.8 range or 2.9 range that does that very thing. So I want to give the parties the opportunity with the jury not present to look and see if there is a standard jury instruction.
I don't think
I can give it. I, like I said, I drafted one for a prior homicide trial where there were a number of statements that were admitted by me, by the decedent, where there were objections, just like we're having now, numerous objections to hearsay. But obviously none of them were being offered by the state for the truth of the matter asserted. That's what was argued, and I made that finding. So in order to have just a blanket instruction, I crafted the following, and the parties ratified it. So I gave it specific to the decedent's statements in that case to... It was either an attorney or some sort of financial planner about some final wishes. And here's what it says. You are about to hear statements made by declarant, and I put the name in. These statements are relevant only to explain the reaction and responses that they elicit. That is, the effect those statements had on a reader or a listener, because there was also a letter that was involved. You are not to consider the statements by declarant's name as true, but only to establish the context of readers or listeners' actions, reactions, and responses.
That'll be fine, Your Honor.
Except for that you are about to hear me, because they've already heard some. So
the court want to substitute, you've already heard and may continue to hear. And by suggesting that, I'm not suggesting that I agree to the further admission of hearsay or her interpretation that's not directly responsive to the question.
So reserving on other objections. And certainly there may be objections you have as we go where you think that they are not being offered for the effect on the listener and that it's hearsay without exception. So those still may come up. All right, so when we bring the jury back in, you want me to give that instruction?
Please.
You have heard and may continue to hear statements made by Doug Benefield to Stephanie Murphy. These statements are relevant only to explain the reactions and responses that they elicit, that is, the effect those statements had on Ms. Murphy.
If I may, Your Honor?
Yes.
I would suggest that it just name Stephanie Murphy, not Doug Benefield, because I think in her testimony it's been broader than that. So I think by identifying the instruction as it relates to this witness, the jurors will consider the testimony appropriate.
All right, so let me go through this again, because I have declarant and recipient, reader or listener. So you have to tell me where you're talking about.
Sure.
You are about to hear statements made by Doug Benefield.
Yeah.
These statements are relevant only to explain the reactions and responses that they elicited, that is, the effect those statements had on Ms. Murphy. You are not to consider the statements made by Doug Benefield as true, but only to establish the context of Stephanie Murphy's actions, reactions, and responses.
Okay, so here's my concern. For example, Ms. Murphy also testified about Judge Moreland and about a couple of the medical records and things like that. And I would prefer, and I think the fairest interpretation would be, ladies and gentlemen, Stephanie Murphy has previously said and may continue to refer to out-of-court statements, you are instructed that these statements, if and when made, are not, you should not consider them for the truth of the matter asserted, but rather for context as it relates to Stephanie Murphy's testimony. That's how I think appropriately it should read, Your Honor.
Response?
Judge, I don't really, I think these things that he's talking about were objected to and they were stopped. So I don't know that it's better to highlight it anyway, but I don't know if adding names in of people to fit this, you know, Doug, statements of Doug Benefield, this person, I don't know that that would be effective to the jury. So I'm a little confused about how to handle it.
All right. Any final thoughts?
No.
All right. I'm open to giving limiting instructions, curative instructions that are suggested by the parties. However, the most recent one proposed by the defense, I don't think is legally accurate. It would be telling the jury to disregard testimony and evidence that's already been presented. I thought the request from the defense, because the objection came specific to Doug Benefield was supposed to move in with the defendant, and that's where we stopped. So it was my understanding that the instruction that was requested was specific to any statements made by Doug Benefield to Stephanie Murphy, that those are only relevant to explain the subsequent actions and effect that those statements had on Miss Murphy, and telling the jury not to consider the statements by Doug Benefield as true, but only to establish the context of Miss Murphy's subsequent actions, reactions, and responses. I don't think the limiting instruction proposed by the defense is the correct one to give. So I'm open to considering language that we can talk about some more, but no, the one you just said I don't think is appropriate.
All right, well, what were the message that we're trying to give the jurors is that when this witness makes hearsay statements, that the jurors should not necessarily receive that information as true, that it is being offered rather not for the truth, but to show the effect that it had on this witness. After all, that's what this witness is testifying to. She did not limit it just to what Doug told her, Judge. She's referred several times to what she heard from Ashley. She's referred to medical records and to allegations. She's also referred to Judge Moreland's decisions. She's expanded upon them. She's incorporated hearsay into her testimony. This was why I approached the bench before she took the stand. So I anticipated this. That's the way she's conducted herself in the deposition and in all of her prior statements. So what I want, respectfully, Your Honor, on behalf of Ms. Benefield, what I want the jurors to understand is that as it relates to Ms. Murphy's characterizations based on hearsay, that it is they should not receive it for the truth of the matter asserted. Rather, they should receive it to show the impact that it had on Miss Murphy.
Response.
Judge, first of all, anything that Miss Benefield said is not hearsay, so it does not qualify under any of this analysis. I do not believe she said anything about medical records. I may be wrong. She did start to mention that she checked herself into the hospital. There was an objection, and she stopped speaking. So I would agree that the judges, that your idea is correct and that that should be the instruction.
Final thoughts.
So, everything that a defendant says is not necessarily admissible. It's not necessarily relevant. It's not necessarily an admission. For example, Judge, if during the course of all of this, Ms. Benefield may have stated how much she loved this routine of a mouse named Topo Gigio, I think we could agree that that would have no relevance. And if this witness wanted to get up and talk about that, merely because that is something that Ashley Benefield repeated, that wouldn't make it acceptable. So I vehemently disagree with Ms. O'Donnell's statement that anything the defendant says is admissible. And I'm concerned about the editorializing by Ms. Murphy being interpreted by the jury as truth, as unvarnished and documented conclusions. And so I would like the jurors to know basically the definition of hearsay. I would like the court to instruct them that it's not being offered for the truth of the matter asserted. It's an exception, and it can be considered to show how this witness reacted to it. And that way, Judge White, it expands the parameters wide enough that the instruction would include hearsay from any source that Ms. Murphy refers to, whether it be Ms. Benefield, whether it be Doug Benefield, whether it be the hospital records or Judge Moreland.
All right, thank you both very much. At this point, I don't plan on giving any sort of cautionary or limiting instruction. I haven't heard the parties agree on language. It doesn't sound like the language I've suggested is acceptable to both sides. So at that point, we'll just continue with the question, objection, ruling. Specifically as to the request regarding editorializing and characterizing, I'm going to sustain on those grounds. There's been, I think my information in front of me is that Ms. Murphy is a fact witness. All right. The request that I give the definition of hearsay to the jury is denied. As we all know, the determination of legal matters, including whether a statement is hearsay or not, or any sort of evidence is hearsay, that's a judicial matter, not a legal. It's a legal question, not a factual question for the jury. Those are my decisions. I'll note that it is already factored into a court's ruling if a statement is offered, if an out-of-court statement is offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted in the statement, it is hearsay. The issue then becomes, is there a recognized exception to that statement or to that hearsay? And is it relevant and material to the case? That's how I'll continue to make my decisions, subject to the objections and the arguments that are made. Are we ready to bring the jury back in?
I just have one scheduling question, if it's okay with Your Honor. Uh-huh. We have, after Ms. Murphy, we have two law enforcement officers here. And then our next witnesses are Dr. Broder and Dr. Quintal. Do you feel like I'm safe in telling them they could come after lunch? That was when they were originally scheduled, but they have patients, and they're asking if they need to cancel to come early.
I have no idea how long these next witnesses... I don't know how long Ms. Murphy's going to take. I don't know how long the next two witnesses are going to take. Well, I have no idea.
I guess the question is, Judge, if we end at 11:30 or 11:40, are you going to want to take a lunch, or do I need to have Dr. Broder here? Because he's in with patients right now, so I need to be able to tell him. He originally thought he was after lunch.
You mean with Ms. Murphy?
We have Ms. Murphy and then two other witnesses we plan to do before lunch. I just want to know if I'm safe to tell the doctors they can come after lunch so they don't cancel patients.
My habit would be if we finish with witnesses around 11:45, unless that very next witness was both sides agreed it's going to be just 5 minutes, I would probably take a lunch break at that point.
Thank you. That, I had asked it poorly. That's my question. I just want to be safe in releasing them so that, Your Honor, so we can keep moving. Or not releasing them, putting them after lunch. 1:30? Should I tell them 1:30?
It depends on when we finish
okay.
this morning.
I'll just tell them it's after lunch for now. Thank you, Judge.
Are you ready to bring the jury back in?
Yes.
Defense? All right, let's bring Ms. Murphy in first. As you're settling in, did you discuss your testimony with anyone else outside of this room?
No.
Did anybody try to approach you and discuss anything about this case?
No.
Did you watch anything or any of the proceedings?
No.
All right. Ma'am, while you were outside, I did sustain two objections that were raised by the defense, and that is some of your testimony has been editorial rather than factual and has been characterizations of observations as opposed to observations.
Okay.
So just FYI, I did sustain those two objections.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're just going to have keep having questions and answers. I'll rule on objections as we go.
Great. Thank
All right.
you.
Go ahead and bring the jury in. Y'all can have a seat. Welcome back, everybody. Did anybody begin discussions amongst yourselves, talk with anybody outside the jury about the case, or do any research on the people, places, things, or legal topics we've heard anything about?
No.
Everybody says no. All right, you may resume your question.
And I believe as we left off, Ashley and Doug were not speaking to each other. Pretty much not speaking to each other.
Right, beginning on August 16th, 2019, they were not speaking to each other.
Okay. And as a result of that, did you ultimately file anything on Doug's behalf?
I ultimately did, yes.
Okay. And what was that?
We filed a... Gosh, let me think back. It was so many years ago now. A series of things. But one of the first things that we filed was an amended petition for divorce. And so it was actually a motion for leave to amend with the amended petition attached to it, which is the procedure.
So that ultimately means it was not seeking divorce before, but now the petition is.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And still the parenting plan with some additional allegations, but that's what the main first pleading was.
Okay. And at some point after this was filed, did you get information that there had been complaints filed against Doug Benefield?
Yes, I did. So that amended petition was filed, I think, November 6th or 5th of 2019. And then within a month, I learned that there was a series of complaints filed with...
Jack, you were set.
I'll sustain.
Ultimately, these complaints that were filed against Mr. Benefield, were they documented or filed in any way in your casework, in your cases?
Object relevance.
I'll overrule.
So, of course, we didn't attach them as exhibits to our next pleading, but we did file an amendment.
Object editorialized.
Sustained. That would ask for a yes or a no.
Okay.
Can you repeat the question for me?
Those complaints, did they make their way, the information at least, into your filings in your cases?
Yes.
Okay. At some point, did Ashley file an injunction request based on these allegations?
Yes.
Okay. And around this time, was there a psychological evaluation ordered with Dr. Broder?
It was not ordered by the court. There was a psychological evaluation that was put into place through, I believe, the Child Protective
Team. Objection editorialized. How many times?
So an evaluation was recommended.
I sustained it.
I request an instruction from the court to jurors to disregard the last answer.
Members of the jury, I've sustained an objection. When we had our initial instructions, the preliminary instructions on Monday morning, I want to remind you one of those very important instructions. If an objection is made, you're not to guess or speculate as to why it was made. Likewise, you're not to guess or assume or speculate what the answer might have been had the objection not been sustained and the witness had been allowed to answer. So you're to disregard those last answers.
As part of this process with...
Sufficient?
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
As part of the process of these cases in court, did Ashley and Doug Benefield, to your knowledge, see a Dr. Broder?
Yes, they did.
For a psychological evaluation?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know when this petition for injunction filed by Ashley was set for a hearing?
I don't remember the date that it was initially set because she filed a motion to continue.
Objection.
Basis?
Editorializing, not responsive to the question.
Ooh.
Go ahead.
It was continued several times after she filed a motion for mediation, and then eventually it was scheduled to occur, I believe it was September 30th of 2020.
Okay. So you said it was continued several times because of a mediation. So just what is a mediation and how does that play in?
Okay, so mediation is a settlement conference that takes place. It generally involves the parties as well as their attorneys and then a neutral person who's generally a certified family court mediator. And so what generally happens is a mediator goes back and forth between each side to try to work out an agreement. And in this case, it was ordered by Judge Moreland in response to Ms. Benefield's motion.
To do the mediation?
Correct.
Okay. And did you participate in the mediation?
I did, of course.
And also Doug and Ashley Benefield?
Yes.
And as a result of that, did some of the focus of the hearing coming up change?
In anticipation of the mediation, yes, the focus of the upcoming hearing on the 30th changed.
Okay. And in what way did that change?
Earlier in September, I think on the 17th, Doug and Ashley signed a joint motion to release the psychological evaluation reports in the divorce case, in the 2018 DR 2318 case. Because in that situation, the psychological evaluations had not been ordered by Judge Moreland. They were put into place through.
Objection. Responsive editorializing.
I'll sustain on the narrative.
So they did a motion, joint motion, to release the psychological evaluation.
Yes.
And is that fairly typical? It's needed in this realm to get that result released to the parties.
Oh, of
objection,
course.
Objection, relevance, it's what's taken place in this case.
Ooh.
A judge would not just release, I'm sorry, Judge, I apologize.
A judge doesn't release that report unless?
The judge orders that it can be released.
Okay. And Doug and Ashley did a joint motion for that to happen.
They did.
Okay. And to your knowledge, what was their path forward from that point?
The path that went into place was they were reconciling and moving to Maryland.
Speculation as to what the path forward was.
And so when we were leading up to the week that he was killed, it was agreed upon that they were going to result in an impasse of the mediation because they were reconciling, and then the hearing on the 30th, the week after, was only going to be to release a psychological evaluation report.
Okay.
And they were going to pursue the move to Maryland.
Okay. So ultimately, the only thing that was supposed to happen at this hearing on September 30th was the release of the psychological event.
That was it.
That was it. Okay. And do you recall what day of the week that was, September 30th?
I believe it was Wednesday. So the mediation was a Thursday prior to the killing, and then the hearing was supposed to be Wednesday the 30th.
Okay. And what day was Doug killed?
Sunday night.
And that would be the 27th?
Yes.
And who was the judge going to be at this hearing on the 30th?
It was still Diane Moreland. She was still the judge on the case.
And at all times that you dealt with Doug, did he ever seem to you overly angry or aggressive about things?
No. I thought Doug was never angry. He was very mellow and matter-of-fact. It was a point of contention between us, actually.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cross.
Yes. Good morning, Ms. Murphy.
Good morning, Mr. Taylor.
We've met on a few occasions, have we not?
Yes, we have.
And we meet again this morning.
It's lovely to see you.
So, your specialty is family court?
Family law, yes.
And you've been practicing family law, I think you've told us, 23 years. You have your own firm, you and your husband?
Yes.
And in that capacity, in family law, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you litigate matters in family court, excuse me, there are rules and procedure that apply to family court, are there not?
In all courts, including family court, yes.
Okay, such as the rules of evidence.
Yes.
The rules of procedure, family court procedure.
Yes.
And ethical obligations as well.
That's correct.
Those always govern your behavior with respect to the tribunal, the court, correct?
All of our behavior, yes, that's correct.
Are you familiar with Florida Bar Rules of Professional Conduct?
Relevance, Judge?
I'll overrule. I don't know where this is going, so I'll overrule for a moment.
Thank you.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, Rule 4-3.3, Candor Toward the Tribunal.
I'm familiar with that rule.
All right. You're familiar with that rule's obligation of a duty to disclose false evidence.
I don't have the rule in front of me, so if you want me to read and see if that's exactly in the rule, I can certainly take a look at it. I'm generally familiar with the obligation to provide candor to the court.
Yes, and to disclose if evidence is inaccurate. I think
we
can agree on that, correct?
Of course.
That would include, would it not, a failure to correct a materially false statement of fact?
Yes, I'm aware that that exists, but I don't see how that could have applied to my case with Doug.
All right. Well, let's see. I want to ask you about a sequence of events now relating to the litigation that you mentioned to us between Doug Benefield and Ashley Benefield.
Was this the injunction you're referring to or the divorce case?
I'll be very specific in my questions, if you'll be patient for a moment.
Of course.
Ashley Benefield files her domestic violence petition on April 23rd of 2018. Is that correct?
I believe that date is correct, yes.
Just so there's no mistake, she then, correct me if I'm wrong, because you seem to have the dates mastered, Ms. Benefield then files a petition for divorce and temporary TPR on May 31st of 2018.
I don't remember the date that she filed those, but she filed, those would be, I think, separate things. And so in response to the petition for parenting plan unconnected with divorce that I filed on Doug's behalf, she filed an answer and a counter petition seeking divorce.
So your answer for purposes of my question was you don't recall the date?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And it wasn't that
May
she
May I approach the witness?
Yes.
See if this refreshes your recollection as to the date.
I need to get my reading glasses, Mr. Sure. Tate.
While you're looking at it, when I refer to the initials TPR, what does that stand for?
Termination of parental rights.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for the reminder. You're right. This is the 31st of May, and she did file a separate case. I had forgotten that.
Well, the question pending was, does that refresh your recollection as to the date?
As to the date, yes.
Yes.
The contents, no.
Was I correct in my statement to you that the date was May 31st, 2018?
Yes.
Now, would you take a look, if you need to refresh your recollection, as to count two, specifically paragraph five? Ms. Benefield makes some allegations there, does she not?
She does.
All right. On June 19th of 18, you file Mr. Benefield's answer.
I don't remember that.
May I approach?
Yes.
Let's see if this refreshes your recollection.
Thank you.
Is the date June 19th, 2018?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And that's your answer, is it not?
This is Doug's answer that I drafted and filed on his behalf.
That
yes.
you drafted and filed on his
yes,
behalf.
Correct.
And in response to paragraph 5 of Ms. Benefield's petition, you deny it, do you not?
Objection relevance, Judge?
Oh, I think
I'll overrule on those things.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. Ms. Murphy, my question was, if you would look at paragraph 5, do you enter a denial?
I'm sorry, it's number 5 is 7 pages long, so I was just checking to see if that was correct.
Well,
yes, we denied these allegations that
okay.
he committed those acts during pregnancy.
Now, as part of that action, your client, Doug Benefield, submits to a deposition 27 days later on July 17, 2018, does he not?
I don't remember that exact date, but he did submit to a deposition around that time frame.
Okay, and in that deposition,
objection,
while
pre-trial motion.
Sustained.
Your Honor, she opened the door. She's already talked about.
Maybe
would you like
please.
To approach?
Yes.
All right, members of the jury, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go ahead and let you go to an early lunch.
It's about 11:20 right now. So the good news is you get to beat the crowds wherever you decide to go. If you could be back downstairs in that jury assembly room where you start each morning at 12:30, and we'll look forward to getting you back up here as soon as we can after that. Please remember, if you do go out somewhere and have lunch, if you go in a group, that's just fine. You can absolutely go in your groups, but do not discuss the case at all amongst yourselves or anything about the case. Don't talk about the case with anybody outside of the jury, and please don't do any legal research or research on the people, places, things, or legal topics we've heard anything about. Again, if you're sitting somewhere, you hear, just kind of hear in the din of the people behind you something about the case, just let them know, hey, I'm a juror in this case, I need you to stop. If they don't, if they persist, please leave and report it immediately to the deputies. All right, we'll see you back hopefully around 12:45. All right, you're going to have a seat. The jury's out. Ms. Murphy, we're going to take an early lunch break. I want to remind you that the rule of sequestration has been invoked, so you're not to discuss your testimony or the questions asked of you with anyone, including the attorneys. You're not to discuss your testimony with any other witnesses or talk about what their testimony was or will be. You're not to view anything about this case.
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll see you back here. If you can also be here about, be back about 12:30.
Okay, no problem.
All right, we'll see you guys back here at 12:30. Back on the record in State of Florida versus Ashley Benefield. It is Wednesday, July 24th. It's about 12:30 and 12:35 in the afternoon. We're back from an early lunch break that I gave for the attorneys to do some research on an impeachment issue that had arisen during the cross-examination of Stephanie Murphy. Before we get to that, over the lunch break, I was in my office doing research, as I'm sure you all were. I was notified by a deputy that an unidentified female had come to the lobby of the ninth floor of the Judicial Center, had said that she is a reporter and she had information about the case, and that she wanted to meet with me. And my response, oh, and my judicial assistant, if I wanted somebody in the room. My response to the deputy was that I can't meet with anyone, but that if there was information to share, we were starting court at 12:30, that she should come to the courtroom and identify herself to the deputies as the person who wanted to speak with the court, and I would hear what she had to say in open court. A couple of minutes later, the judicial assistant that is filling in for my usual judicial assistant came into my office and said that the deputy had called her by phone and said that the unidentified woman had said she would not appear at 12:30. And that was it. So I'm just making a disclosure of extrajudicial matters that happen. I can give you a minute if you'd like to talk with your client and your respective co-counsel.
I would certainly like to know what it was she had to say, and I would invite her to contact me. I would make a determination whether or not it was something that I thought was worthy of being brought to the court's attention and to the prosecutor's attention. That's all we can do.
State, do you want to be heard?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right, then let's finish up this impeachment argument, and then we'll get the jury. At this point, I've asked for the jury to remain downstairs in the jury assembly room. Just it's more comfortable, that chairs are more comfortable, they can spread out, they have vending machines and so forth. So, all right, it's your objection.
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.